The time is 8:34 a.m. on October 24th, 2023, and I am convening this video conference and telephone conference meeting of the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Carrying Association. This meeting is being conducted pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act and the Association's antitrust policy. All information disclosed or discussed is to be used only for carrying out the business of the association. Proper notice of the meeting was filed on October 12, 2023, and published in the Texas Register in accordance with the Texas Open Meetings Act. A copy of the notice should be attached to the summary of the official minutes of this meeting. A quorum is achieved as all nine directors have been confirmed as attending in person or by video or audio conference. Also in attendance are Board Counsel Shelby Betts, General Counsel Jackie Rickson, Texas Life and Health Insurance Attorney Association Executive Director Bart Bowles, and TLHIGA employees Jarrett Terry and Jock Topping Haggerty. And from the Texas Department of Insurance, we have Vane Hugo, Jeff Jones, John Walker, John Wooding, Kenesha Schuster, Caitlin Bain, Sean Martin, and Brian Rewey. And the first agenda item is consideration and possible action on consent agenda items, which is the summary of the official minutes, ratification of payments of NOLA's fees and expenses. And they're on page 1-1 of the briefing.
This is Dean. I'll move the consent agenda.
James Huckabee, second.
Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you very much. So on to agenda number, item number two. We have a recognition of the service provided by Board Counsel Shelby Betts.
And Shelby, we should comment. You did serve as a director on this board back in the 90s. And then on October 6, 1998, you were engaged as board counsel. So you just passed the 25th year anniversary as board counsel. And I was personally had my two cents. It's been great. You are fabulous to work with. You have extreme legal skills. You have a lot of tact. You're very calm. And you have ethics. Ethics like no one else. And I've always appreciated that. And it's been a pleasure working with you.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. It has been an honor, a privilege, and a complete pleasure to work for this board. And I've been the beneficiary of such kind words last night and Bart's words today. I just thank you, thank you, thank you. And I'd like to return the compliment to everyone associated with the association. The board, as I said last night, was my first client in private practice and has always been my favorite client. And I think that's in large measure to the fact that I have worked with other boards, both insurance company boards and non-insurance company boards, and have never seen the engagement across the board by every director who has served on the Toledo on the association board and has contributed so much and playing to their strengths. It's always been a diverse group of people on the board. Each and every one who makes such a concerted, dedicated effort to promoting the best for the association. So it's just, you've been a wonderful client. And thank you, and I'll miss you all, but I know, boy, the association is in great hands. You've got the primo executive director of the Guarantee Association. You've got the Primo General Counsel and Jackie. You've got a fabulous office manager and tap topping Haggerty and Jared, who's in video conference land, is the guru of accounting for the association. So everything's in such good hands. And again, thank you for everything. Appreciate it.
What else for the board?
Yeah, it's been a blessing working with you. I had lots of telephone calls with you and get good advice from you, and just enjoyed having you. Well, gonna miss you.
Thank you. Ditto. Same here.
Chev, it's been an honor working with you. Thank you for all your assistance to the personnel committee and to the board as a whole. Wish you well in your retirement life. And I will put it on my calendar to continue to come share pictures of that.
Absolutely. I expect to see pictures of all the grandchildren.
But, good luck to you. Godspeed.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Shelby, this is Dean. It's been a great ride. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and congratulations to you, Director Frigo. We understand.
Yes, sir, I'm an old married man.
You got hitched. Well, that's great.
Yep.
Congratulations to you.
Yeah, you know she's blind, but other than that, she's great.
Well, it's a very brief recommended resolution, but we wanted a record. We wanted this community association's public record, something to acknowledge Shelby. And Shelby, we also wanted something other than a token we gave you last night. We wanted to give you something a little up a level. So
oh, my goodness. This is most unexpected and exceeds everything that was due for my retirement. Thank you so much. And I will open it immediately.
Pull that card.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you. A great, you call these tombstones, hopefully not literally, but an appreciation to me by the board of directors. Thank you very much. Again, I can't express my appreciation enough, and I will miss everyone that I hope to keep in touch with you all. So,
Barb,
thank you.
I didn't get off mute in time. It's Ted Kennedy. Shelby, I'd be remiss if I didn't say, perhaps for the one that's known you the longest, I think dating back to 1989 when I became part of your American General team in Houston before your service with this association and into private practice, we've enjoyed a relationship both business apart from the association and through the association. And on behalf of all the team in Houston who's known you so long and respected your service and appreciated your counsel over the years, best wishes in all your future endeavors, and thank you for the legacy that you leave us all.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And all these kind words, enough said. You all need to get on to the business of the association. But thank you.
I'm going
to
read the resolution. So, resolution regarding B. Shelby Betts' service to the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association. Whereas, in appreciation of Shelby Betts' 25 years of service to the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association, and in recognition of her retirement as counsel to the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association Board of Directors on December 31st, 2023, it is resolved that the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association Board of Directors bestows on Mrs. Betts the honor of outstanding board counsel and presents her with a memento of its appreciation for her services.
Motion to approve, Huckabee, second.
All in favor, please say aye.
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 I'm going to assume there's nobody opposed.
Thank you for that.
Okay, on to number three. Consideration possible action on board council vacancy.
So we would be remiss if we didn't say this is going to create a hole. And so Jackie and I talked about this, and I wanted to put this place marker in the open session of the board and just say, provide you a little bit of history about how the position of board council came to be. This was back during the days when the association went from privately managed to managed by a consulting professional management consulting firm, Lachelle Kaufman and Bowles, and then back to an employee managed arrangement. Through that, the board council position was created, and I included in your materials, and this is going to be repeated in the January meeting, I included in the materials the description of the duties of board council and the duties of general counsel. So they are distinctly different. There is some overlap, and there are occasions when both are involved on the same issue. You just want the perspective of two legal minds. So I wanted to let you know that this is something that I am evaluating and considering and gathering some options. We talked with Jackie about certain aspects of it. We can talk about this in a little more detail in executive session confidentially, but I am not going to ask you to take any action today. This is just to tee this up for contemplation, and we will address it in January. So I don't know there's anything to discuss today. This is just introduced. This is an item that we want you to start thinking about, and we'll be addressing it in January. Between now and then, if you want to call and talk with me about any of it, feel free. And Jim, that's all I wanted to do today, unless there's some specific request for information or a question in open session the board wants to ask me about this.
Man, I fucking lost him. Winsburg, Mount Vernon.
And so, agenda item number four, consideration possible action regarding any matters presented by the Texas Department of Insurance.
I don't think we have really much to tell you in the open session.
Okay, then agenda item number five, quarterly report from the executive director.
A couple of small operational items to point out. We want to congratulate directors Sikandlis, Huckabee, and Kennedy for their reappointment to the board. And their new terms will now expire September 30th, 2029. So congratulations to them. I hope they feel they should be congratulated.
Thank you, sir.
We've added to your sentence. the other item here in operations is the access piping system. In vain, and Jamie Walker and I have talked, and Shelby's been involved, Toppy's been involved in those discussions. We had to back burner this for a little while. We had some other activities. There's only so many hands to do the work in our shop, and we just have other things to do. It's now back on our agenda, and we're working through it. We're going to be sending some detailed data element list to Jamie and start talking about, is it possible to get a periodic, possibly annual data dump of those data elements, and the association can then build its own transactional history that used to be available through the Department of Insurance. And this kind of public information is just the platform that the Department of Insurance was posting this information underwent a change. There were some concerns with security on it. So I think it was 4 years ago this was taken down, and it's left a little bit of a void. So we're going to try to extract the data, the TPI's request, and then build our own mechanism to have these transaction histories. So it's going to be coming back up.
Director Wells, could I ask just I know it's a rookie question. Please define ICANN for me.
Oh, what does ICANN stand for, Payne?
I don't remember. It's before my time.
Yeah. I'm assuming it sounds like it's a data network that comes out of the TDI,
It's a database of it's transactional histories. It's Form A filings. Anytime there's a name change, a merger, an acquisition, assumption reinsurance transaction. And it's a way that you can look at a profile of a company and you can track the history. You know, a block of business gets transferred from one company to another, or the company's changed names, or there's a merger and acquisition.
And you may be looking for a policy from 30 years ago. Where is it today? And without that mechanism, you really can't find it. And it also has some other information in there, but it's a good place to look to see any company that is authorized to operate in Texas or has been authorized. That history was there. And since that information has been pulled down, it doesn't exist anywhere else.
Oh, wow. Yes. For example, my company did 45 acquisitions, and through those acquisitions, we got policyholders from 200 different companies because those companies that we bought had done acquisitions. So if a policyholder wanted to find a policy, they could type in the name of the company on the policy form they had and click all the way through and find what happened to it. It was really helpful.
And it had been down for a while, as if it were not accessible.
It was taken off. It was not available through TDI. I guess it's been about 4 years now. Mm-hmm. And so we were asking, is there a way we can license it? We can build our own secure channel, anything like that. And it came down to, we can probably extract the data and build our own. So it's not real time, but if we get an annual update, it's going to fill in a lot of the holes. It won't be perfect, but it's better than what we have now, which is a huge hole.
Well, imagine when situations come up like that, you're just chasing rabbits. It sounds like you're going.
Well, there's a lot of rabbit trail.
Yeah.
But we have to, when we have a company that becomes insolvent, that company may have policies that we don't know how they got there. And we have to go back and say, okay, how did they get to this company? Did they start with another company? And also, after we transfer business, we'll do assumption reinsurance transactions and transfer business to a company. It may transfer that business later on. We don't know that. But it's another way when a consumer contacts us and says, what about this policy with this insolvent company? Oh, we transferred that to Jim Lewis's company. Well, Jim may have transferred to someone else. We don't have to call Jim and check. We can look on there and say, there's the phone number of the company you need to contact. So that's
thank you. So I would like to.
Yeah, it's really helpful.
There was a lot of entities out there that when it went down, my phone was ringing off the wall. What happened?
We'll have policyholders call, and their company was Lion's Head Future Insurance Company, but the one we bought was Lion's Head Past Insurance Company. So we'll help them find their actual insured.
Director Beeman, my best example of how valuable this is, the phone's ringing, busy, and so there's no one to answer. So I grabbed the phone. It was someone from TDI. It says, I'm trying to get in touch with X, one of our other employees, or former employees. She's been real helpful helping us find companies. I says, really? You know how we do that? We log into your system and look. I said, okay. And so then they said, well, can you do that for me? So I looked up the company for him and told him who he should be calling. It's helpful, but not a lot of people know it's there and how to use it. And now it's completely gone. So we're going to resurrect it.
And Bart, it's also very important with our assessment data whenever we do mergers and acquisitions, so we can transfer premium data from one company to the next whenever they merge for assessment purposes. And
One of the places now, if you do a profile search on the Department of Insurance website, it takes you to the National Association of Insurance Company profile search. But that's only for active companies.
Yeah.
If the company's no longer active, it's not on there. There's no database. And if the company may be licensed in Texas or another state, but if they are under some type of supervision where their ability to write has been withdrawn, they're still licensed, but they just can't write policies. The NEIC database is changed and they get dropped from that state. So it's not as valuable. All right, additional meetings coming up. I attended the summer national meeting in August in Seattle. Very productive, a lot of things happening there. The next NEIC meeting will be in Orlando, the fall national meeting, that's the end of November. That's going to be interesting because NOVA and the NCIGF is sponsoring a desktop exercise on Guarantee funds and guarantee associations and how we get involved in the transition to liquidation. I don't have the complete description of it yet. This is going to be brought to two commissioners in a kind of a round table interactive session. And I wish I had more because I've been drafted to be one of the moderators to present this. So
I'll be getting more information in the next few weeks, and we're going to be filling this out.
Is that in closed session part? Or?
I don't know yet. I'm waiting to see how. I was just in Nova's office a couple weeks ago to meet with the new president, Wade, and she said it's still being developed. So, and it's not on the agenda yet, DDIC, but I understand it's going to be the afternoon of the 29th. So it's on the front end of the meeting.
Technically, it's not going to be part of the AIC. It's going to be on the day before.
The day before. So
the idea being there'd be a lot of regulators there in town. And that was, as you know, anybody's been in the AIC, it's probably going to be a block of time within that several days. So that's my understanding. And again, I think some number of TDI people are going to be there.
Okay. So it will be worthwhile. And I know some of the other people that are going to be moderating and helping and assisting the breakout sessions. So it should be helping. Okay, some IR meetings to mention. Jackie and I recently attended the Tech Development Series workshop in San Diego. Jackie actually presented on some complex issues in receiverships and I think some closing issues. Right. There will be IR meetings held in conjunction with the upcoming NEIC meeting. There'll be an IR board meeting. I will attend those, of course. I recently attended a meeting in NOVA's offices. The four former members of Participation Council chairs and current chair, we met with new President Wade to answer some questions for her and give her some perspective on how the insolvency task force system works, what's NOVA's role, where do we have gaps, where do we improve. And it was a productive couple of days. Jackie and I will be attending the NOVA MPC meeting right after this meeting, being held the next 3 days in Salt Lake City. There's quite a lot on the agenda there. This is also the meeting each year where it's combined with the annual meeting. So there'll be more presentations from some CEOs in the marketplace and more forward-looking what's going to be happening, what's changing in the marketplace right now. And the last thing I'll mention, this is the project I had recommended. I had noticed we've had 27 new Guaranty Association administrators in the last 3 years in the live health side. And there's been a void in information. And there's so many that walked out the door and took their experience with them. And in working on task forces and chairing some insolvency task forces, I found there was a huge gap in understanding of what's the responsibility of a task force? What are some of these issues? I was introducing and trying to get approval on a transaction or an agreement that had been drafted. And I got a question, what is paragraph 6? And I thought, oh my gosh, and all these new people, they don't know what a clawback provision in an early access agreement is. It's one of the standard agreements that we use all the time. So I had to back up and apologize. Says, let's walk through them. What's the purpose of this agreement? How does it work? So I asked that we build some type of repository on key issues involving insolvency task forces and insolvency operations. Well, that's been expanded to talk about NOLGA operations, NOLGA governance, members participation council governance. So it's going to be built into a Guaranty Association system repository on key issues. And we're not going to put documents in there that are 30 and 40 pages long. We're talking one or two pages. I'm going to break it down into very bite-sized chunks. So if an administrator is going to be working on a task force, and the task force has on the agenda, we're going to be addressing statutory deposits. They can go to the repository, I'll call it the library, go to the keyword index, look at statutory deposits, and go read about how they're handling the task forces. And if there are options, what are those options? Then they can go into the task force meeting a little more armed with knowledge and be ready to have some deliberations to make decisions. So it's going to be built. It's going to be a living process. It's going to go on from now on. I've been asked to chair it, and we're just getting started to build it. So I'll be talking more about it. It started out being called the GA curriculum, and then it was suggested to be called the GA Resource Center. I'm pushing just call it the NOLGA Library, but it's not going over very well. But that's some of the other projects we've got going on. And any questions on basic operations? So, Jim, that's all I have on that item.
Okay, so agenda item number six, consideration of possible action on reports and recommendations from the audit committee meeting.
So, Dean, we we've teed this up for you that you have several recommended actions here, but the actions on engagement of the auditor, engagement of the consultant for the network penetration testing, and the write-off the assessment receivables, we thought those would, they all need some advice and clarification from counsel. And there are some of the provisions of the proposals that must be discussed confidentially before we take action. So we've teamed those up to be discussed in executive session. And so the only thing at this point would be anything else you want to report to the committee and then the action on the 2024 audit plan.
Well, the engagement, I wouldn't think that would be confidential.
We have discussions of terms.
Right, but I think the basic discussion can be an open session.
Can we talk terms? Can we talk fees? Can we talk increased fees? Okay. Jackie, why don't you explain what you can tell you?
So, Dean, did you hear Mark's question?
Yeah, we were going to recommend Clifton Larson Allen again. But yeah, we could do it. I just like to do stuff in open session.
Yeah, so Dean, you can go ahead and describe the basics of, you know, the engagement. And then if there's any further discussion, particularly involving legal issues, then the board can take that up in executive session.
Okay, yeah, we did recommend Clifton Larson Allen again. We did see a significant fee increase. They said there's a lot more accounting standards that they have to comply with now, but it was a pretty good pop. We're not in a position to switch auditors right now, so we still recommend that we engage them. And then on the audit plan, we did not make any recommendations to change the audit plan. The network penetration, we do need to talk in executive session, and the uncollectible write-off. Bart, do you think that needs to be an executive?
I think you can introduce that.
Okay. I have to look at counsel just to make sure I don't breach any confidentialities. We can discuss that now, and Dean, if you'd like, Jared can give you an overview of the issue and the numbers involved.
Well, the issue is we've got receivables from people that we don't even know who they are. Isn't that it?
That's right. This goes back at least a decade and a half, almost two decades, and we've been trying to find the underlying documentation of these deferred collections and why they were still being carried on the financial statements of the association. And we cannot find the detail by company. We can tell you how some of these arose. They were assessments that had been authorized, and the companies involved may have been in rehabilitation, ultimately ended up in liquidation, could not pay their assessments. So if we could identify them, I think quite a few of them are definitely not collectible. But that's the vast majority. Even if these were valid companies, we can't find the details for the individual amounts. And they've been carried for quite some time. And there's a second piece, which was the 1996, Jared, deferral?
Yeah, that's correct. The deferral and reallocation and
in 1996, because of a capacity limitation, the association had a 1% limit on assessments rather than 2%. There were some amounts in excess of that 1% that had to be deferred for collection in later assessments. And a lot of them were, but these are balances that were never collected. And I know why they weren't elected is some of these companies did not have accessible premiums. But now we've been trying to find, and we've been going through, I think, three accounting conversions since then. It appears that, and Jared has this suspicion maybe more than I, we think a lot of these tracking sheets were done on old spreadsheets many years ago, and we just don't have those records. I will tell you, I was in the association at that time, but I was hands-off on assessments. I did not touch assessments at all. I was not the executive director at the time.
So, Dean,
yes.
Isn't there a statute of limitations somewhere out there?
Not necessarily on receivables. We have discussed this issue with the auditor, and there is no problem with carrying a receivable for any amount of time as long as you believe it to be collectible. At the point that it becomes uncollectible, you need to write it off, and that's where we are on this one. For the assessment receivable, so we have an assessment receivable out there, and we have an offsetting allowance in the exact same amount. So the impact to the financial statements on those is zero. The issue is the auditor questioned whether or not we should include these receivables in our total receivables if they're not collectible. And so that spurred this whole conversation on whether or not we should continue to carry these, which we have asked that you not, that you allow us to write them off so they're not on the books anymore. On the deferral and the reallocation, there will be a small impact of roughly $70,000 to the revenue, to the income statement, and a write-off of a receivable balance there. And that's the net impact of the deferral receivable and the reallocation payable.
But Jackie, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, isn't there a statute of limitations? Doesn't the contract have to be, do you have to take legal action or something, or it is not collectible?
Well, so the general rule, I don't know specifically about receivables, Dean, but the general rule is if you have a written contract, then your statute of limitations is 2 years. And if it's not written, then it's 4 years. So we'd certainly be beyond the 4 year statute of limitations. And I don't know that, so I'm thinking about this, you know, off the cuff here. I don't know whether we would consider these contractual obligations or not. I would lean towards the longer limitations period. But in any case, these are probably for like 12 years old or longer.
Yeah, 1996 was a long time ago. Yeah, we do recommend writing them off.
Any other questions?
Why would auditors allow you to carry it on your books? You brought it was collectible, but the law says it's not collectible.
I have no idea.
Okay.
I'd like to follow up on that. There was no accounting policy as recommended by the accountants as what that timeline is.
No. Well, does it really matter if we're just going to write them off?
I don't think it does.
No, okay.
But I would say if these were a year old, you wouldn't want to write them off.
Yet. No, I agree. But I do think there should be some kind of policy that says they're going to be gone after this, so we're not basing this 10 years from now. Yeah. We've got receivables sitting out there that are not going to be collected from. Now, well, it sounds like you're making the corresponding adjustments, so you're not going to have a one-year hit when you write them off.
Right. And on these, there haven't been any of these. None have arisen since these were created, because we've changed our practices, our accounting policies.
And the capacity is higher.
Yeah, our capacity is higher. But also, we have had a few companies that requested deferral because they're in rehab and the board has granted that. We have those specifically lined out and tracked. So now that we encountered a new regime, we control these now.
Mm-hmm.
We've enhanced the processes. This can't happen again. This is a cleanup of an old mess, from 20 plus years ago.
Yeah,
and we do have a policy where we review our receivables on an annual basis for collectability. And if they, if we do deem them uncollectible, then we will ask the audit committee to review writing off these balances. And we've done that with various balances over the last several years. But like Bart said, this is kind of a one-off situation where we have bad records that we can't do anything else with other than write these off.
Yeah, and the auditor has not said you need to do something about it. We just said, we're just kicking this can down the road. Let's stop that. Just write it off and move on, because we've done all the research and digging that we can do.
So just a question, not really related to this, but if there's assessments, those are contracts. Those are statutory obligations. They don't have anything to do with a contractual obligation. So yes, that would be, if there would have to be a law that says after so much time. You,
yeah, and there's not. There's not anything in our statute.
Yeah. That, so that addresses statute of limitations, I don't think even matters, right? Because it's,
I think that's probably right.
It's the same way the premium tax offsets related to assessments that are carried by the comptroller offset against future premium taxes. If they're not taken, they sit there.
Yeah.
And in other states in the laws, it specifically says it's use it or lose it. If you take it, it's so much over a 5-year period as it's written off. And if you can't use it, it's gone. Not in Texas. It specifically says this will carry on. And I know the comptroller has got premium tax available offsets for companies that go back almost 30 years. So,
and also, didn't the auditor say in JARA, they're not going to give an ultimatum, you need to do this, but they had no problem, you're taking this action to correct the books, so to speak.
Yeah, this is a management decision. This is not something, the auditors have reviewed it. They had no issue, like I said, with us actually carrying the receivables. They just question whether or not it should be on the face of the financial statements. And it's actually in just a little note on the financial statements, which was the big issue. The auditors have no problem with it, but yes, they don't make the decision on whether or not we deem something collectible or not. They just review that.
So are we doing this now?
Well, we have, if I understand from Jackie, there's three things we can do now. We can do the engagement for the auditor. We can do the set of receivables.
If there's a possibility that there anybody has questions they want to discuss in executive session of a legal matter, so kind of what we were just doing, actually.
Why don't we do that? Well, why don't we just do the audit plan?
Yeah, we shouldn't approve the audit plan. I mean, we shouldn't approve the renewal of the auditor before we even know what the fees are. I mean,
let's wait and do that in executive session. So, okay. Dean, the only thing I would say you should address now is the audit plan for calendar year 2024. And there's a sample resolution on screen.
And what about the thing that we just spent 10 minutes talking about?
If there's any additional legal questions, I just want to leave it in executive session.
Oh, okay.
So we can just cover our bases there.
Yeah, we didn't have any changes in the audit plan. We recommend it be approved.
Is that a motion, Dean?
This is Patty. I'll move. Or did somebody already move? Sorry.
So I think it's Dean with the motion and Patty with the second.
Right. I'll second. There we go.
Thank you.
Any more discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim, for your tolerance. It's a little tricky sometimes to introduce things in open session and try to say, we're right there. Be questions if we will make sure we deal with them confidentially. So you go, there's this balance between open session and confidential session. So I think we've addressed it, but I apologize if it was a little bit cumbersome there. So we're ready for our...
So it was... Did I just miss it, or did you mention the commercial insurance coverages?
I can. It's
on the agenda.
Yeah. Another thing the committee, audit committee addressed is I provide an annual, every October, annual review of all our commercial insurance coverages, exactly what they cover. Do I think they're adequate? What are the rates compared to the prior year's rates? And everything was amazingly in line. even had our cyber coverage went down by a dollar. And that's one that I always worry about, because last year, we changed cyber carriers because there was a significant increase. We didn't like the approach they were taking. But all the commercial coverage seemed good. No significant changes. They're very comparable. You know, last year we increased our cyber coverage to triple the coverage and actually found it at the same rate with triple the coverage at another carrier. The only thing I would suggest, and I did mention this to the audit committee, that I feel we should shop our directors and officers coverage a little bit more extensively next year. It's a very expensive coverage. And I'm going to ask Jackie to kind of walk back through the board, because we've had some changes with the board about what statutory protections do you have? What does the D&O protection provide? We expanded many years ago the indemnity for directors in our plan of operation. So we just want to see, is there still the necessity, which I think there is, but that's not my call. It's the board's call for D&O coverage. And I'd like to shop it and see if we just can't get some better rates, because it's been with this carrier for, it's the only carrier we've ever used. I'm trying to look how far back it went, probably 10 years.
Yeah.
About 10 years. And it's very expensive coverage. So that was the only comment, Jim, but there's going to be some work to do, but no action today.
What about number G, development of the 2024 operating and capital expenditure budgets?
Well, that's, I don't know if there's much for the committee to report. That's, Jarrett and I always say, here's what we're anticipating in the development of the budgets. If there were to be any significant changes, like with some capital expenditures or some significant costs, any other changes, you know, there's, of course, insolvency activity we can never anticipate. So whatever is insolvency driven doesn't impact. We're just talking about the operational budget. And we review with the committee, here's the basic assumptions, and there's nothing that we feel the budget's going to see a significant spike or change, either up or down. But the detailed budget by line item will be presented to the board at its January meeting. Randy, she's in our office.
Oh, you're on.
Before we leave that item, I want to correct something I said just a minute ago. The four-year statute of limitations applies to contracts, and the two-year applies to torts. So we got that reversed.
Well,
but this isn't a contract.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, Dean, is there anything else I've gotten from the audit committee meeting?
No, I think that covers it. Do we go to executive session now or just wait and do it all at once?
When Jim's ready, we'll move to executive session.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
So I'm going to read the words to end this session, right?
Yes.
The time is 9:17 a.m. on October 24th, 2023, and I'm recessing the regular session of the Board of Directors meeting of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Community Association in order for the board to meet in executive session pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act.
Jim,
the time is 12:01 p.m. on October 24th, 2023. The executive session of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Association Board of Directors meeting has concluded, and I am reconvening the regular session of the meeting pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act.
First two actions on through.
Yeah, the recommendation of engagement of the auditor for financial audit for the year ending December 31st, 2023. Everybody's seen the resolution. Did we re-up Clifton Larson?
So moved. Huckabee.
Second, Beeman.
Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
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 I guess.
Okay, Jim, on the second item here, we left it as the company identified as D because this was in the public materials that were distributed. Based on the discussion, I understand the recommendations is to accept a proposal from Security Compliance Associates for the full suite of network penetration and social engineering testing. So we now insert the name in the resolution.
Motion.
Beeman moved.
Williams, second.
All in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Thank you. And then, oh yeah, the write-off of certain assessment receivables and the 1996 assessment referral and reallocation balances. Okay. Motion?
Williams, so moved.
Huckabee, second.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. Is that the last one?
What about the audit plan?
Huh?
We talked about the audit plan.
Audit plan, I thought we already did that.
The Friday health insurance thing, there's no.
No action.
Okay, that was good.
No action. So the rest of the meeting is just reporting. I'm going to run through it very quickly.
Yeah, so if anyone needs to go, thank you for holding out for votes.
Okay, so quickly, just item 9, few items just in the state operations and solvency operations. For the first 8 months of 2023, we paid out $15.3 million in benefits, and we're projecting as of August 31st, we got about $15 million left to pay. We made some adjustment here on our Friday forecast just because we were working from a year-end 2022 lag study from an actuary that had been engaged by the company. And comparing that to actual experience, the numbers are much less. So it's still very hard to predict, but we think these numbers are a little closer to what the actual obligation is going to be. We received $8.2 million in distributions from insolvent estates in the first 8 months of the year. And then you can see on 9-4 some of our communications activity and our complaint log, we include we've had no new complaints against the association. But let me move ahead, talk about specific insolvency. Right here, Friday Health, you can see the numbers there. This is as of August 31st. We have $14.8 million in benefits paid, about $2 million in admin expenses. Well, the benefits paid are now over $17 million, and the admin expenses are climbing too. So we're going to be in total about almost $22 million in total cost of my insolvency right now. We talked about where we are on the administration solution. We are continuing to work with receivers in the other states on various vendors that are being paid directly and the allocation and true-up expenses. We will note that our monthly fees for our contract with UST Healthsworth is considerably less than had been projected because they were unable to engage all the staff they needed. One of the stick of work under that contract was a labor-driven arrangement, and they just did not engage all the people that were needed. So we will have some updated numbers when we come back in January as more of Roddy plays it out. Okay. Jackie's not here right now. So, oh, there she goes. Jackie, on Friday, is there anything on the assignment for the benefit of creditors you want to add real quick?
No, there's a briefing schedule for the various receivers that have objected to the ABC proceeding. And I think the briefing ends at the end of this month. And then the judge who's in charge of that will set a probably oral hearing date. And we don't know when that would be.
Okay. And so there was a draft resolution. We included your materials for some authority to move forward with an administrative solution for Fridays or more after this was drafted. We just said we need to have more specifics. So we, as much as we hate to have to bring you back together for a special meeting, it may be necessary to take an action on Friday, maybe in early December. So let's just hold that until we work a little further and try to find a solution. Penn Treaty, it's interesting, this doesn't show up in our numbers because we refunded. We funded all of our Penn Treaty obligations, about $130 million to the captive that we and the other 46 or 45 hearing associations on LTC RE. What I will show you is where we are in the payout.
where the Guaranty Associations are nationally, excluding Illinois, Wisconsin, and Hawaii, because they're doing their own thing, and I don't have the numbers. But you can see the Guaranty Association as a whole have paid out between claims payments and the cash buyouts that were offered as part of the rate increases, a little over $1.5 billion, and in Texas is $86 million to be paid out. Service level standards is a little work. My committee, for those of you who may not be aware, I chair a committee called the Policy and Claims Administration Committee, or it's really not the NOLGA Task Force. I report to the NOLGA Task Force, to the Coordination and Strategy Committee that I also serve on, and to the LTC Board of Directors. So PACA is the frontline direct contact with the TPA. So all template communications, the monitoring of their performance, any changes in policies or pursuit procedures, in handling the claims, any issues that come up, they all come through my committee first. And so it's quite a bit of work that we do. That's why I have the members on everyone, because I get, I think there's 18 administrative reports I get monthly. But on the service level standards, there were a couple of problems with the claims payment and claims management customer satisfaction surveys. They were just clunky. They weren't written well. We weren't getting good responses. So PACA recommended to the CNS committee, as the authority to impose penalties, not impose penalties, but ask the TPA redesign these things. So myself and three others worked with the TPA. We redesigned the surveys from a written survey to a telephonic survey, and we're in the process of rewriting a couple of the service level standards that will be measured for performance. Much better results, much cleaner communication with the policyholders. We'll be able to identify, are there issues a little better. On the other 23 service level standards for the first three quarters of 2023, the Davies TBA has met all of them. The wellness pilot program is continuing. We're in the second year of it. It's called the gap year. We're expanding some of the outreach to the intervention group to offer them opportunities. So, you know, we have an intervention group and a control group. Each one is about 6,000 policyholders to measure our wellness program that we're implementing on the control group. Intervention group producing better results in claims reductions than in the control group. And we're starting to see movement, but it's been very, very slow. Most of the wellness that's been done is in the form of home modifications, grab bars, anti-slip, lighting, magnification. But there's also some coaching and counseling. I didn't put them in here to save time, but I have some testimonials that have come in from policyholders. They're very happy. When we implemented the program, one gentleman sent us a $15 check. He said, "This is too good to be true. You don't get something for nothing. Here's $15. We sent it back. So the consumers are very happy to have it. But our intent was to deliver a benefit to policyholders, but also move our cost needle out there. And we haven't quite seen that come to fruition yet. This year we implemented the electronic visit verification program. I killed the old program several years ago. It was not very good at all. It was very discriminatory and it was costly, not producing results. Went through and looked at a number of different vendors, ended up going with AssureCare. They have a very good program, and it has through the application, the app that caregivers use when they sign in and provide care, it tightens up the claims reporting. So instead of a caregiver saying, you know, they get there at 8:30, well, they write in 8, okay? Or they get there at 8:45, they wrote in 8:30. With the app, not only do we know exactly when they're logging in to provide service, it has geofencing. We know where they're logging in from. We also know during the care, where are they going? And we've started three surveillance issues. You know, that person cannot provide care at this person's home when they're 400 miles away at the beach. Okay, real life that happened. Jackie and I had a fraud instance here in Texas that took 4 years for us to identify for the red flags to bubble up to the surface. And we'd had this program in force. We would have probably found it within 2 or 3 months. And instead of paying out $200,000 before we found it, we would have trimmed it in 1,000. So
So we do have a group monthly that looks at the outliers in reporting and in geofencing anomalies to see if this is misuse of the app or something that requires more investigation. And that's through social media, through surveillance, a lot of different techniques. The last, it's been a lot of time, the last 2 months, we had a company here in the town called Continental General. As a long-term care writer, has branched out and started now doing TPA work and consulting work through audit for other long-term care firms. Some of you may remember Rachel Chiani from the Texas Department of Insurance. She is their general counsel. But that firm was engaged by LTC Reed to do a claims audit, and it came out glowing. It was a very good audit, but there were some recommendations of things procedurally and in communications that should be checked. And so my group, PACA, has been exploring with the TPA and made some revisions to some of the communications and cleaned up some communications on, I will not go into, they're very complex issues, to make sure we were equitably treating policyholders when there were gray areas. So it's required some time, but it's worked out really well. So pin treaty will continue. As I mentioned, we're about, if you ever want to see them, I do a quarterly administrative report with a bunch of graphs. It's just beautiful. It's colors and stuff. If you ever want to see it, it's posted on the NOAA website, but I can also send it to you. And there will be an LTC re-annual meeting for all the owners of the captive. I think it's tomorrow afternoon in Salt Lake City. Eric Rangan, the chair, is going to be presenting that. And but the pin treaty runoff is doing quite well. North Carolina Mutual, I'm probably going to trim this from mutual reports because we're just in a runoff on this company. But since we just started it, you know, in October, I wanted you to see of this, if you can see, the cash surrender value is about $135 million nationally, only 1.2 here in Texas. And then that's on the life policies and on the annuity cash surrender values. It's not a big issue for us, but this company was another of the small life insurance writers. And you can see there's 239,000 policies, just a lot of policies. And it's going to take a long time to run off. You can see there's been 18 batches of claims, and we've only paid out $144,000 of benefits. It's just going to take a long time to run off. At some point, after some data cleanup and some accumulation of better matrix, we may be able to offer this for assumption reinsurance, but not right now. It just doesn't have any appetite. Okay, South National. This was the third of the global companies, of Bankers Life and Commercial, and Colorado Bankers being the other two. Southland was really a prepaid burial company. Okay, and you can see we paid out $170,000 in benefits, actually. I update this. That's as of the close of the financials, August 31st. As of the date I wrote this report, 14 batches, $239,000. It's going to be a slow runoff of prepaid burial contracts as the services are provided when the insureds are deceased. I've done some work with the Department of Banking. They, of course, surfaced again. Prepaid burial, the pre-need contracts are supervised or regulated by the Department of Banking. Insurance policies regulated by the Department of Insurance. And through the Lincoln Memorial insolvencies, you know, we learned how to coordinate with them. There, they were very concerned because the Lincoln Memorial policies did not have any growth on the death benefit. So their question to me was, on Southland National, are you going to pay growth? Just if the policy provides it. So I audited the first, I think, three batches that came through, and every one of them, yes, there are different ways that growth is provided. Some of it's tabular, and some of it is a flat 4.5% or 5% from the date of death forward, from a maturity date to the date of death. These policies do provide growth. And so the Department of Banking is quite happy that they do not have funeral homes that are their pre-need sellers that are suffering losses, providing services of many thousands of dollars and getting much less than that in benefits. So another one that's going to run off for a while. So on some of these long-tail runoffs, I think what I'm going to try to do is trim the estate presentations and keep the estate presentations to pertinent issues that you need to hear about, and annually just give you a summary of here's all the companies we're running off. What do the numbers look like? Save time. Just an easier way to present it, and there's nothing for you to act on. So I'll just catch you up once a year, and we'll save time in the meeting with substantive issues we need to discuss. And that's all the insolvencies, Jim.
Okay, so on to item number 10, corporate governance issues.
Well, let's do this. As you recall, the board of directors had a process for doing self-evaluation. Where we'd send out a form, you'd send out, get your comments. Shelby would do the compilation, and we would discuss them once a year in a board meeting. And the board discussed that and said, having to fill out these forms and we're not really getting meaningful results is very burdensome. Is there another way to do this? So on every board meeting under corporate governance, there is an agenda item for the board to talk about any issues on board interactions, governance, any issues that has been raised with me in the interim between meetings. And then annually, at this October meeting, I would, in advance of the meeting, send out an email requesting comments on a couple of specific categories of governance of the board. And I did that, and I sent a reminder out. I got a couple of comments, but it was very, very high level. I asked Jackie to then lead the board through a discussion of board performance and to see if there's anything the board wanted to discuss regarding evaluation. Take it away.
Okay. And so, as you saw from the email that Bart sent to you, the primary topics are time, teamwork, and overall contributions of the board to the Guarantee Association's performance, the adoption, review, and observation of corporate governance, and then additional board training and continuing education. So I think let's just take the topics in that order. Bart did not send on to me whatever comments he got. So if you're thinking I know of a comment that you sent, I don't. Sorry. But let's just take them in that order. So any comments on the time, teamwork, and overall contributions to the Guarantee Association? Remember, this is on the board level, not individual board members, but you know, as a group. What's your feedback on how the board is doing? Any suggestions or maybe things you'd like to see different?
We don't get to call out individual people.
Sorry.
It's going to be fun.
Let's go. You could wait till their last board meeting.
Everything.
We're all functioning well as a team, good teamwork, respect with others. But yeah, I think we all make a contribution to the association individually and collectively.
Well, I certainly don't disagree. I think, as Shelby said earlier, you know, this board really for several years, but it continues just to get better and better. And the, you know, commitment everybody makes to reading all the materials, to being engaged in these discussions that are not always easy discussions. You all are not just keeping the chair warm and doing the wondering minimal amount.
I replied back. I can't find what.
Okay. Adoption, review, and observation of corporate governance. So, you know, we beefed up all of that in response to a letter that we got from the general counsel at the TDI a couple of years ago. And so that includes having an annual review about your obligations, your fiduciary obligations as board members. And as new board members, all of you had an initial board training. And then if you can think of any other kinds of trainings that you would be interested in, you know, you don't have to say anything right now, but if there's anything that would be of interest. And I would say that I know, you know, Bart often will let you know about things that are going on at NOLGA. that are training opportunities. And to the extent your schedule permits, I think those are good things to take advantage of, especially those upcoming town halls that we're talking about.
You should share with the board this new wonderful NOLGA library.
That's true. The resource. That's a good idea. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, another thing I'll mention here is if you all have questions at all in between board meetings, or if we're talking about something and you want to know more about it, you're certainly free to contact me or Bart or any of the staff, and, you know, we can answer questions or have discussions. And if there's anything you'd like to see on the board meeting agenda sometime, let us know that too. Do we have any comments from our video attendees?
Not for me. Yeah,
we're good.
Okay.
We're running a little bit long on time, but why?
We're short on time.
Jerry, could you touch on item 11? Run through some highlights of some of these financial issues you highlighted.
Yeah, so most of these are just a result of the Friday insolvency. So I'm just touching on the big changes in the financial statements there. On page 11.2, you'll see in the accounts payable a big swing there. And that's just really a result of timing. We'll have the expense in 1 month, and then we'll actually pay it in the next month. So you'll see that happen occasionally as we're paying these big batches, these big claim batches for Friday. Bart had mentioned earlier, and in the next note there on the insurance contractual obligations, he mentioned earlier about our changing our obligations for Friday as we gather better knowledge from the experience that we're having. So you'll see those contractual obligations change quite drastically over the months as we make better estimates. Next page, please. So you'll also see here in our changes in unbilled assessments, contractual obligations, and claims, those all three kind of move hand in hand. We have big swings in these numbers this quarter because of Friday. We're paying, like Bart said, we showed $17 million in claims, but we're closer to about $20 million now. So you'll see those changes come through. Next page. As we talked about earlier, we had to liquidate some treasuries to pay for these Friday obligations. So you'll see that in the cash flow statement here, this $10 million decrease in the long-term investments that was liquidated and changed to cash to pay for the Friday insolvency.
And here, I might have highlighted in the footnotes, we got the new assessable premiums for 2022 in. There was a little change.
So we got those in. So that changed this year. I put over there on the right hand side the numbers from last year, so you can see the change in our assessment capacity went from 1.25 to 1.37. And then I think there's one more note to talk about here. Here's where our $20 million for Friday has come in. If you recall, that's all being intercompany loans that will be paid back once we get the early access funds, and we'll pay those back. And that's all I have on financials, unless there are any questions.
No questions on financials? Hey, the last item we have is in your packet. We're not going to go through it all, but we have the 2023 calendar of activities to show you what's left that'll be happening during the year. And then 2024 projected calendar of activities, you will see the dates we've identified for various committee meetings and board meetings. The next is scheduled for the board to meet January 23rd, 2024. And before that meeting, the Assessment Investment Committee and the Personnel Committee will be meeting on the
16th.
I believe the 16th, right?
Yeah.
Yes, January 16th. So we have a couple members that have already leave the meeting, so we can check with them. If you have any issues in your calendar, either for January or any other meeting during the year that you see, send it to me. These are targeted tentative dates. And if we need to move them a little bit, we'll see how other activities fit and others, directors' schedules fit. So please mark January 23rd, 2024 as the next meeting. And Director Huckabee, you had requested that we look at the first 2 weeks of December. And I think Jackie and I kind of shot that down until we know more.
Right.
We just can't say it yet.
Not a problem.
Okay. And Jim, that's all I have for today.
Does anybody else have anything? Okay. And the time is 12:28 p.m. on October 24th, 2023, and this meeting of the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association that is held pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act is adjourned.
Mm-hmm.